Hi folks, just to let you know, what's coming up is an interview with Facebook, former Facebook moderator Chris Gray. This interview took place a couple of weeks ago, but because of the general election coverage, we didn't put it out. Very grateful for Chris for the opportunity to have this conversation and the people who introduced him. While I have you, make sure you check out Disturbing the Peace on the Tortoise Shack and Reboot Republic. As you know, Rory, host of Reboot Republic, is running for the Shannon, so maybe throw an eye onto roryhearn.ie to see if you're that way inclined on the NUI panel. And finally, and more importantly for me, my point of view here, we need support to keep these podcasts going, so please go to patreon.com/tortoiseshack, price of a cup of coffee. Honestly, guys, we love doing this, but we just need more support to keep them going. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we are talking about, it's safe to say, a difficult subject, but I'm going to leave it up to Martin, actually, because he's real excited. But I do have to do a little bit of housekeeping. These podcasts don't sustain themselves. They rely entirely on patrons. We need people to come on board, help us do them. We are really delighted with the listenership. If you want to check out Disturbing the Peace, check out Reboot Republic. But if you want to check them out, if you get something from them, head over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Price for a cup of coffee once a month keeps us on the road. And then again, 26th of January, big live show. We are going deep on the general election. It'll be a Sunday night, so you can stay out late and you don't have to do your homework. That's enough from me. Martin.
We're delighted to be joined in the Tortoise Shack by Chris Gray. Chris worked for a company called CPL, and what they did was moderate Facebook content. Now, we've heard about Facebook content and the debacle that is moderation, but Chris was exposed to, there's no point in even going into this, some of the most horrific content you will see anywhere on the planet. Chris, along with other CPL employees, is now suing Facebook in Ireland's High Court. They say they've suffered psychological trauma, PTSD, and it's really kind of one of those stories where they were once removed from a very big company, their subcontractors, but they were working entirely for Facebook, and what they were exposed to has damaged them as people. And now they are trying to expose this and bring it back. Chris, how are you?
Chris, you sound like you should be really not laughing.
No, I feel like I should be lying here groaning and crying the way you've introduced me. I think, you know, most of the time we're all fine, or we all walk around saying, oh, I'm fine. You know, we are fine. And then, you know, the wife is giving you grief because you're being unreasonable again. You're grumpy. You're not sleeping. So it's very hard for me to look objectively at myself and say, you know, how am I? Because I guess I'm...
You are in the situation.
I'm in it. Yeah. I can't step back and look at it.
Can you tell us, how did you get the job in the first place? Was it advertised? Or were you headhunted for the job?
Oh, it was a rush panic. There was, you might remember a few years ago, there was a lot of trouble with people like committing murders and suicides on live stream on Facebook. Yes. And Mark Zuckerberg announced, we're going to double up the number of people doing this work. And of course, then he just picks up the phone to CPL and says, right, we want twice as many people on Monday. Mm. So there was this like mad panic to get people in. And I've just sent a CV in and I got a phone call saying, come in for an interview and when can you start?
What kind of training did you get?
I got, it would be 8 full days of training. So a 5 day week and then 3 days the next week and then bang, you're into it. Yeah.
And is it kind of a learn on the job process? You
yeah. I mean, they didn't explain this very well, but the training that you do get is, you know, these are the rules and we're teaching you today. We're going to teach you about the rules on online bullying. And today we're going to teach you about hate speech. And then you're going to go and try to figure out how to implement that, you know, how to use that in evaluating content.
Well, I know some of the guests we've had here will have, you know, have spent 10 years in college learning how to identify and deal with hate speech. I mean, 8 days doesn't seem that adequate.
Well, it's not 8 days for hate speech. It's 2 hours for hate speech and 2 hours for spam. and 2 hours for child abuse and so forth.
And do you feel you were prepared?
You feel that you're prepared to look at something and have an inkling of whether it's right or, you know, whether it's acceptable or not. And then you pull up the rules and you know where to look and you go and you read the rule and apply it to what you're reading.
But that involves you having to look at, you know, as I don't want to go into it because I know it's traumatic stuff. But it means you having to look at awful content and make these calls on awful content. And I presume there was somebody above you who had to confirm the decision, or if there was a question about the decision, that there was somebody else who would have the authority to say yay or nay or to overturn your decision.
It's not quite like that. I mean, the important thing to remember is it's not every single thing you look at is terrible. Everything you look at has been reported by somebody. And that could be as simple as a vegetarian doesn't like a picture of a cow.
Okay.
You know, because this poor lovely animal is going to get killed. And you have to look and go, oh, it's a cute little cow. It's fine. But then the next one might be what goes on in the slaughterhouse. Mm. And you never know. You press the button to close one and the next one comes up and you never know what it's going to be.
What steps did Facebook themselves then take to protect moderators?
No, I'm not aware of any. They provide in-house the wellness team, they're called. Mm. And the wellness team, you know, they would then send emails out inviting us to finger painting and yoga and
Reiki.
Just that kind of stuff. But they are available if you want to go and book time for a one-to-one counseling session. Mm. If you've reached your targets, if your numbers are okay, you can take time off to go and have a chat with one of these people, maybe once a month. And then I've actually just obtained my records from the outsourcing company that does the wellness. And all they then do is just tick a box. You know, this person was here at this time and date for A, stress, B, family relations, C, something else. You know, they just, that's what they do.
And you made a very interesting point there, though. You said when you hit your numbers, you were literally, you had targets, you had goals to hit.
Absolutely, yeah. And I do a lot of media right now, and very often people will contact Facebook for comment. Mm. Either before or after. And Facebook give these statements and they say, nobody has targets and your welfare is our priority. And I had targets. Mm. I had targets every single day because when you report something and you say, right, I think this is hate speech, it goes in the hate speech queue and the hate speech queue has to be processed within 24 hours. There has to be.
There are SLAs on all of these.
Right. So there could be 10, 15, I've seen 20,000 tickets in the hate speech queue waiting to be processed. And you come in and your team leader says, right, you need to do 600 of these tonight to try and, you know, to make sure that everything, you know, that we're not getting over the turnaround time, 24 hours.
There's not much room for nuance in that. I mean, it's very much look, make a decision immediately.
Yeah. I mean, your average handling time was supposed to be, I think, 30 seconds for that particular content. Yeah. It's not always that bad. You know, you'll look and you'll see, you know, I hate Irish people. Mm. That's an expression of hatred against Irish people. Mm. You can't do that. You can't say that kind of thing. It takes me 5 seconds to say, oh no, click, 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 click. And it's done. And then the next one, 5 seconds and the next one. And then the next one takes you an hour because it's complex and you end up, there'll be 3, 4, 5 of you standing looking at a screen and you've got the rules open and you've got the training material there and you're all discussing and arguing.
Which is absolutely, I mean, when you look at it from the perspective of this new media, that it's very young media. And we also see in terms of what the states are trying to do, as in individual states, and they can't even come up with a definition of what half of these things are, whether it's hate speech and how we're impinging on freedom of speech. Did you find within the corporate, within the Facebook entity, that a lot of it, that free speech was kind of given was of a higher value than, say, some of the more grey areas where you could say, well, this could be hate speech or it could just be satire or it could be.
I think for us as low-paid workers working for a subcontracting company that's not well supervised, that kind of philosophical argument is a little bit far away.
Very good.
What we're concerned with is, am I going to get penalized for making the wrong decision here? You know, I don't care whether it's hate speech. I care whether I'm going to reach my quality target. Because every month, or actually every week, somebody is going to take a sample of the tickets that I've worked, and they're going to look at them and make their own decisions.
Is that somebody from Facebook or
no,
CPL?
No, this is somebody else within CPL, but then he's being audited by somebody from Facebook. So he's going to look at maybe 200 tickets or at least 200 tickets a month of mine. And I have to make the same decision 98% of the time.
Which is,
so that's, hang on, that's four mistakes a month.
Which is beyond human error alone is, you know, this is reasons why we say things aren't, nothing's infallible, and particularly not, you know, human error. It's a very high bar to jump.
They've written these rules. There's literally 10, 12,000 words of detailed description of what the rules are that you have to implement, and you have to know where to look in this document for what to do.
Can I ask you, whose rules are they?
These are Facebook's rules.
So Facebook give the rules to CPL, who pass the rules on to you over the course of 8 days.
That's right.
And you have to learn these rules over 8 days. Facebook make the call on what is and isn't hate speech. It's not really your decision to make. It's not really CPL's decision to make. It's Facebook's edict. Yeah. They decide.
Right.
You work in Facebook's building?
Yeah.
You work with Facebook people?
Oh, no. We never see them.
You never see them. You never see them.
No,
so you're in a unit.
It's a Facebook building, but it's not Grand Canal.
Okay.
It's another building that's been rented by Facebook, and there are Facebook logos inside the building. There's nothing outside to identify it. But the Wi-Fi network is the Facebook internal Wi-Fi network. The computer you're using is handed to you by a Facebook employee and is tied to the Facebook network.
So what I'm trying to get at is that the lines aren't very clear. There isn't a really clear demarcation line between CPL and Facebook. It seems to be a vehicle of convenience, a kind of an arm's reach.
Arm's length. I used to say, well, you're kept at arm's length, but you are still, in many ways, you're micromanaged. While I was there, especially because we were this new intake of people, and it was all a bit Wild West. We were kind of making it up as we went along, which suits me fine. I was quite happy with that. But I was talking to somebody just a couple of days ago that is still there, and they've contacted me because they've seen me in the newspaper and they wanted to have a chat. You now have to account for your toilet breaks. You are not allowed to be away from your computer for 2 minutes without a good reason and without, you know, describing what that time is used for. And it has to come from, you know, your toilet break quota or your lunch break quota or your wellness time quota.
Yeah. It's corporatized. Everything you're thinning is
everything
corporatized.
Everything now is micromanaged in detail, apparently.
Micromanagement isn't anything new. I'm going to say that someone that's not new, but what I find quite funny about it is that the customer experience, the Facebook user experience, that doesn't differentiate between you, whether you're a third party or an actual, or you're working directly for Facebook. So if I'm someone who was actually the victim of hate speech or been sent these things, I don't really give a damn who the moderator. I just see Facebook at the top
it's
of
just
it.
Just Facebook. Yeah, it's Facebook.
Absolutely.
I did a little bit of my work, maybe 10% was related to identification of people. So you've lost your password or you've had your account hacked or you've got a new phone and you can't get into something like that. You know, you're contacting me and I'm making a decision or I'm asking for some more documentation. It's going back and then the ticket goes back into the queue and somebody else will be dealing with the next step. And the poor user on the other end, all they know is that they're talking to Facebook and they can't get sense out of Facebook.
Yes.
And you'll see the frustration. I remember one. It was a guy, he'd spent 6 months trying to get back into his account. And this, the email thread, the backwards and forwards, just went on and on and on and on and on and on. And we're not allowed to use our initiative. You have to just follow the procedure. And the procedure just didn't account for this particular guy's particular situation.
Can I ask, how long were you working? I mean, after the 8 days, how long were you working before you realized that what you were seeing or what you were moderating was damaging to you personally?
Oh, I don't think I realized that until ages after I'd left. You're kind of in denial. I think what brought it home to me was I did an interview with the Irish Times, and I was just there to talk about management, micromanagement, that kind of stuff. She'd contacted me. I'd agreed to talk to her anonymously.
Yes.
And she started asking me about the content. And this is why I've told you guys I'm not discussing this stuff with you. Is that I broke down in tears in a coffee shop. You know, and you can see looking at me, I'm not a kid. I'm a grown man. I've been all around the world. I've had all kinds of very difficult experiences in the past. And that I would be reacting like this was a shock to me. And I was absolutely bewildered with myself. So that's when it became real, was after I'd left.
But it was real to your family before that. They had seen the changes.
Oh, my wife. Oh, God, yes. I mean, the day I left, I came home and I said, oh, honey, I've just been fired. And she said, oh, thank God. She was delighted. And I looked at her just open mouthed. I was like, why? And she's, because you're a miserable bugger. You are morose. You are argumentative. You're ready to fight about any little thing. You're not sleeping. You're tossing and turning at night. It's all this stuff that I hadn't really been aware of.
And it was impacting on your life, on your everyday life.
Everything, yeah.
Do you feel that you're through? You've come through, or do you feel you have a lot of work still to do to get the old Chris back?
I'm in a process. You know, like after I left the company, and I didn't talk about it, I'd never talked about the work. You're not allowed to. You've signed an NDA. You're going to get sued if you tell your wife what you saw today. You know, it's that kind of environment. Like I called it the Facebook omerta, you know, the vow of silence that the mafia have. And, you know, and then the dam breaks because some nosy reporter keeps poking me. And once it broke, I could not stop. And then I was getting all these other journalists talking to me, and I'm just going out and having sob fests and telling the stories again and again. And there was a different one every time. Every time I would remember another horrific thing that had obviously really affected me and I hadn't processed.
But the structures weren't there in CPL or in Facebook to deal with that level of, impact in your life. I mean, they're in a tick box exercise. There's not anybody really asking you.
Absolutely. And I think it's different for everybody. You know, I needed to get out there and talk about it and get upset and, you know,
process.
Feel the trauma. Yeah. And now I'm kind of through that, and I don't talk about the content because I've talked about it and it's out there. And if you want to know, you can find it in the newspapers. And I'm ready now to move on to the next stage of kind of learning to be dispassionate about it. So I'm actually just starting the actual therapy, formal therapy process now. Did you see a TV show called The Bodyguard?
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, and it's this war hero. He's been through all this stuff, and he won't admit that he's got a problem. Mm-hmm. And I'd actually seen this at about the same time. And I'm, you know, that generation, we don't have – ADHD, yeah. PTSD, all this
just
crap.
Get
just,
on
no,
with
it's
it.
Bollocks. Yeah, you get on with your life. Yeah. And I was watching this show, looking at this guy, and, you know, I haven't been through the same kind of traumas that he apparently had, but I could see myself going, no, I'm fine. Hmm. I don't need to talk to anybody.
And that's kind of PTSD. That's post-traumatic stress.
Right, you know, that was what made me kind of willing to accept that, God, you know, maybe that must be why I'm crying, you know. And now I'm at the point where it's like, yeah, I'm screwed up and I need some help, and I've made the appointments and set the money aside to go and pay for this, you know, to just to get well. So I'm on a trajectory, and I'm confident about the future. I feel good about where I'm going now.
The we're not gonna go into some of the stuff that you had to actually sit through and adjudicate or moderate or whatever phraseology we want to use for it. I will ask though, Facebook are obviously a global company. They're big HQ in Dublin is HQ for most of the world in many ways. So you could be seeing things from across the globe, I'm right in saying?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we were working on the UK and Ireland market. It's kind of based on, you know, where were you when you posted this or where were you when you reported it? I'm not quite sure, but it's kind of British, Irish content. But, you know, 20% of the people in this country are from somewhere else.
Yes.
So, you know, I would get stuff in Brazilian. I would get stuff in Urdu, Arabic, Pashtun. You know, you would get stuff from all over the world. And you would, as much as possible, you would try and then send that to a language specialist from that market. But you've already seen it. So when it's visual.
Yes.
Yeah, you've already seen.
It's already had its impact. Yeah. You don't need to understand what they're saying.
Well, I mean, the reason like that concerns me and the reason I asked it is because I know, you know, if you're seeing these videos or you're seeing this content and it's from across the world, you are opening up these things. Like we do talk about how young men are radicalized and how these things happen. And when we're, you know, and the impact, we're very interested in that you say about being on your journey. And we've been fortunate to speak to other people who've been through counseling and gone through other stuff. I've gone counseling myself. I'm happy to talk about it. But when you talk about it, it's about that, what Martin said, you know, when are you going to get back to the old Chris? And my thing is always going, well, I'll never be the old Tony, that's for sure. You know, you can't unsee or you can't.
No, I don't think I will, but I'm a great believer that life is always the trend is upwards. So, you know, the old Chris was a bit of a dick.
You're like
certainly, you know, when I was 19 or 20, some of the things I would say or do, I look back now with absolute horror. And I'm sure that 5 years from now, I'm going to look back at me from 5 years ago and say, well, I'm glad I'm not that guy anymore either. You know, and this experience, it's been hard. It's been traumatic. It's also been fascinating and illuminating, you know, and I've learned a lot about not just myself, but the world and about how things work and about some of the, just the dramas and the awfulness in other people's lives that they're expressing through social media. And, you know, that might be impacting other people. We have to deal with it, but you do start to also just say, you know, that poor bugger, what is driving him or her to do that, to say that?
Do you find, from the content you've seen, do you think that it is easy for people to be radicalized? And Tony has mentioned radicalized. Do you think that that constant barrage of negativity can radicalize people?
Absolutely. I mean, we would discuss at work after we'd been there a few months. I remember one of my colleagues saying to me, do you find you're becoming more racist?
Yeah.
And I was looking at him like, well, don't know why. And he said, well, it's just, you know, you see all this Britain First was the big one at the time. Britain First and Tommy Robinson. He said, they're starting to make sense.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I kind of said, yeah, maybe. And then once I'd got that idea in my head, and the next time I get one of those videos, I was analyzing myself as well as what I was looking at. And I was saying, yeah, you know, I'm not as revulsed by this as I was. I'm not immediately, I'm just thinking like, well, can you say that? Is that against the rules? Is that allowed? And I'm just, you've lost the emotional.
You're dispassionate about it then at that stage.
Yeah, you're not.
Normalized.
It's normalized. You're not dispassionate about it. You are just accepting.
Okay. And that's, I kind of suppose that's what it is for young men. This content is fed into them. And the more they see it, the less it impacts on them, the less they see the less critical of it they become.
Well, it's also, It's a bit of a kind of complex concept, but it's not just normalizing it. It's legitimizing. It's giving permission to do something. You know, it's saying that it's a, well, he keeps saying that. Well, I can say it as well.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of people kind of think things that they know they shouldn't say. And, you know, gradually over time, you talk yourself out of that way of thinking. But if people are saying them a lot around you, if you're seeing it.
Constant reinforcement.
Right. Then after a while, it becomes okay for you to say it. Hmm. And then that influences the next person.
We've actually seen that, particularly over the last couple of years here in Ireland, where we didn't have a very vocal, right wing in Ireland, but over the course of the last 2 to 3 years, it has been legitimized by political players and political figures and people who want to get into politics. And they've legitimized this discourse of othering.
Absolutely, yeah.
And they've completely legitimized it. And now it's part of, we're in a general election cycle, and now it's actually part of the general election cycle.
Well, what's worrying about it is the nonsense of where we know, say, for example, on Facebook, where they're hosting some of these videos or they're hosting things, and it's insidious and it's subtle. But what you end up then is with someone who has built this brand, who then actually is on a TV station, for the TV station to say, well, we brought them on because we were going to disprove them, or we were going to debate them, we were going to deep, and you went, but what you've actually done is, for all those young men who said, well, actually I listened to them, you've legitimized them, because now you've actually said, look, they had a YouTube channel, but now they're on bloody TV.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I ask you, and I don't, again, you don't have to go into any detail, but were the days when you just came home and just literally wanted to go crawl into bed and just...
Oh, that's every day, because I was on the evening shift. I was doing 6 p.m. till 2 p.m.
Well,
so I would literally just come home and get in bed.
Mm.
And then you wake up 3-4 hours later.
Discombobulated.
You're just going like, Jesus, did I miss a nipple?
Yeah.
Because there's about 100 different options to choose from when you're taking action on a video or anything that you've seen. And if you've chosen the wrong one, it doesn't matter that you've taken the right action. So, you know, let's take a simple example. You see a terrorist murdering somebody. Mm. Well, that's graphic violence, but it's also been posted to support a terrorist organization. So is terrorism more important than graphic violence? Oh, you know, Facebook have got to make a decision.
Mm.
And then you have to always follow that hierarchy of actions that they've given you. So you wake up in the night going, Jesus Christ, was there an ISIS flag in the background there? Have I got it wrong?
Mm-hmm.
So you're replaying
the
stuff in your dreams, I guess.
Mm. But you pointed out there with the nipple, free the nipple. The absurdity too that something as benign as a nipple.
That's wonderful.
it takes up so much of Facebook's time. We can't show nipples. Why? We've all got two. All of us.
Some of us have three.
I mean,
but we all have, I don't know about you, but I've got that thing between my legs. So, you know, picture, it's one of my early days in the job, and I get this video, and it's a close up of a young man in an aroused state, bringing himself to a more relaxed state.
Yes,
and it's a super close-up. And we're working with big TV screens. We have a big monitor. It's like my whole field of vision is this, just this guy, just his hand and his meat. And we're all new. And this is like the first time I've really had to deal with this kind of thing. And there's a very good atmosphere amongst all the guys on the show. So I just kind of shout, oh, God, Jesus Christ. You know, I step away from the computer and everybody gathers round and we're all pointing and laughing and going, oh, God, yuck, quick, delete it. And you delete it. I'm not touching it. and I wouldn't touch the computer. And I kept nudging people going, well, you do it. And nobody would
take kind of, the action.
Yeah, nobody would reach into that zone. Go close and press the buttons. And eventually it was one of the girls. She held a piece of paper over the screen and then she pressed the buttons, the key combination to delete it. And then she took wet wipes
and cleaned
the keyboard and wiped her hands. And looking back,
yeah, it was her mind.
Well, it's obviously this. You feel this stuff touches you. It connects with you, and it was a huge joke at the time. But it's 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and I still remember that in disgusting detail. So it's obviously getting to you in ways that you're not
absolutely
aware of. Yeah.
And I mean, that's okay. Look, we can, as boys, say, well, you know, kind of that's on the mild end of what you have to see.
Yeah, but we watch porn. I mean, maybe you don't. But, you know, I'm sure there. Don't come across it. There are people There are people out there who watch porn who are thinking, well, why would you worry about that? And I agree with them completely. Like, why the hell do I care? What's the difference? There's something different because it's your workplace.
Yes.
Because you have to think intellectually about it. I don't know. But the stuff that you see at work affects you differently from almost identical stuff that you might watch at home. You know, I have a colleague who watched a lot of horror movies. And he's probably seeing more gory, awful stuff in his free time than he did at work.
Yeah.
But now he's stopped watching it. He says it's boring.
And
he doesn't watch horror movies anymore because
it's desensitized.
No, why would I?
Yeah.
And but when you talk about desensitization, you also have to understand that from the content creators, i.e. the users for the most part, there are reasons why there are things called keyboard warriors or all of this sort of stuff, because people will say and do things online behind anonymity or behind, you know, from a distance that can make them feel that they wouldn't do in normal life. They wouldn't do. So if you take it from that basis, that maybe it's only a snapshot quite often into the worst of us.
I think the ones that worry me most are the ones that it's not abnormal for. I came across a video of a child getting very badly beaten by a parent. And what worried me most about that was normal for them. It shocked me. It horrified me.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the thing is different cultures, different ways of seeing the world are now being confronted with each other. And whatever you post, somebody is going to get annoyed about it. You know, it's like we were talking about the vegetarians and the cow. You know, it's a cute little cow, and vegetarians are worried about that. So they've reported it, and I've got to look at the bloody cow and decide if it's okay. And then somebody else is like, look how well I discipline my son.
Yeah.
And he thinks that's perfectly okay, and he can't understand why I'm deleting it.
Yes.
Or the next person can't understand why I'm not deleting it. They don't know what the rules are that I have to follow.
Hmm. And is there a concept to these? Is there a theme to these rules, a concept to these rules? Or is it just somebody in corporate litigation sat down and said, we need these rules?
I can't say, you know, because we're not party to how anything is done. It comes from Menlo Park. Yeah, it just comes from Menlo Park. It's been there for years in some cases. But it appears to have just, whenever something happens, there'll be a new rule.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a reactive policy.
It seems to be reactive. I didn't get the feeling that there was any top-down, conscious, coherent effort to create a set of policies that could be easily enforced.
And that's where I'm going to come at you. Is there a way of, for want of a better word, fixing Facebook? Or is this the mold it's in and it's just unbreakable?
I don't know. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg is very keen to get governments to regulate this is done.
Because they don't have global power.
Well, you think about this, you know, does that mean that, you know, the government of Saudi Arabia will set the rules for what you can say in Saudi Arabia, and the government of China will set the rules for what you can say on Facebook in China, and Facebook will then just censor people or report them for blasphemy and get them beheaded because that's what the local law says, and it won't be his responsibility? Is that where we want things to go? I mean, I don't know if that's his plan. He might be naively thinking, US government will make the rules for Facebook and they will apply those rules globally.
I've heard a lovely phrase used for Mark Zuckerberg. They said he's like the Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, that he's always on tour and it's always his apology tour. He's always going, and by the time he gets back from apologizing, he has to go back around again doing the next Sunday shows because they have to apologize for the next thing. And as you rightly point out, Martin, it is reactive in that situation. I'm not going to defend Facebook, but I am going to say that obviously they are a business. They're there for profit. Their biggest business is keeping your eyeballs and then selling you junk that they think you want, or linking you to ads that you think you want. That's what they're there to do. And you know, we've seen only recently in the run up to the US presidential election that's upcoming that he said he won't fact check a lot of the political stuff that's happening in the US at the moment. He said, let people make up their own minds whether a lie is a lie when it could be clearly a lie.
Yeah, I kind of have some sympathy for him here. I'm very critical. I tend to look and go, well, that's rubbish, you know. But then I'm a solutions guy, and I say, well, how would I do that? Mm. You know, how would I make my job easier? How would I change the rule for this situation so that I'm not unfairly penalizing people, taking away their freedom of speech, or so that I'm not, you know, allowing even more crap to slip through the cracks? And it is an incredibly difficult task. And there are things happening that are kind of crossovers between different problems. So let's say somebody posts on Facebook that Christmas lights have been cancelled because the Muslims have influenced the council.
Mm. Yes.
Now, is that fake news? Or is that hate speech?
Oh, God. On mine, if it's untrue, it's hate speech.
Well, is it then my job as a content moderator, not as a fake news researcher, to then go and research and find out whether the Christmas lights have been cancelled make that decision?
In your 30 seconds to sort out that ticket.
Right. But define hate speech now in such a way that I can now take action, or I'm required to take action, because I'm not there to take action. I'm there to defend your freedom of speech.
Because if you said it was hate speech, and then the barrier to hate speech then, or what's the boundary on hate speech? Like, in hate speech for lots of people is incitement. That's not necessarily incitement. You know, it can be.
Well, see, you've got to define what hate speech is.
Exactly. So it just.
Right. And that has to be a universally acceptable decision.
Which there isn't.
Which can be implemented by a poorly paid person who's had 8 days of training consistently to get the same result as the guy in Berlin doing the same job, and the guy in Barcelona who's doing the same job, and the guy in Hyderabad, and the guy in Manila, and the guy in Miami. We've all got to reach the same conclusion when we see the same piece of content.
Is that possible?
Well, that's the goal.
I'm wondering, is it possible?
You have to do that. That's why we have the 98% quality score.
Yeah.
But what's the alternative? You complain about something and I think it's okay, so I leave it up. And then you complain again and then the other guy thinks it's bad, so he takes it down.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're looking for a consistency, but that's based on a consistency based on arbitrary rules that you don't know where they came from, you don't know how the methodology.
Yeah, but at least it's consistent, and you can then work around that as a member of the public. You can get a sense for what you can and can't say.
We've had this conversation, Martin, recently about some of the things whereby you know we've been censored ourselves on Twitter, and you know that and. Ultimately, as we said, what's the point in giving out? It's their platform. It's their platform. Yeah. It's their business. And they are, in effect, the gatekeeper. So it is a business. So we're all just.
People don't see it that way.
I understand that.
Especially Facebook, you know, it's just seen as a utility, public utility. And we would get a lot of criticism as moderators. You'll see people posting, like, I've just been barred from Facebook for 2 weeks. All I did was say, da 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 da.
Yeah.
Yeah. But those fascist Nazi bastards locked me out and put me in the Facebook jail. And I'm reading this, just thinking, you have no idea.
No.
Yeah.
And now I have to bar you again because you've just repeated what you said.
And you're one of billions.
Yeah.
Of billions.
Yeah.
I mean, and that is, I think that's the scary part of the platform. Look, it was set up to rape girls on in college, and that, and that's what it was set up to do.
Yeah, but
was,
now that's against the rules.
But yes, it's just absolutely going to come to that. That is the very purpose it was set up for is now against the rules.
Yeah, but
so it is a platform that has grown very quickly. It is global, yet it doesn't have the structures in place to manage what it has.
Well, nobody
become.
Does because nobody's ever had to do this before, and you can't just magically sit down and say, oh, look, people are going to abuse my platform. I will put these rules in place and then everything will be okay. Because you don't know how people are going to abuse it. And you don't know how they're going to try and get around the rules.
Is Zuckerberg the best guy to be doing it?
Well, who is? Who would you trust? You know,
Well, look, you can't trust governments. You can't trust anybody who is in it for profit. And then there is no other group that stands out beyond that who could actually successfully moderate the platform.
We ask the Pope.
yeah, even he can't successfully but he's got
a consistent moral code that has been developed over thousands of years. Yes, you know, we could just ask him and do it his way. Or what should we call it? Just use the Quran. You know, I mean, you're never going to please everybody.
And I think that's quite clear. I mean, I keep saying you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
No,
I always
said it's
out and it's in the world now. You can't regulate the internet. You just can't. If you try to, people will, like, I can download the Tor browser in about 2.5 minutes and be doing whatever I want to do online. All of that capacity is there. Facebook just happens to be a behemoth. It's a global phenomenon and it has defined quite a lot of information exchange in our lifetimes. There's just no two ways about it. And it's a recorded history now for families. They look upon it, as you said, as a public utility. It's a way of staying in touch and it's a way of posting things. However, unfortunately, there are always bad faith players. And when you have a for-profit model, you will tend to hold your nose a little bit more, or you may pull your punches at times really important then is that when they reacted then, what they've done is, from my mind, from what you've explained to me, is that they've under-resourced it, decided to give it, do it via a third party, so they have got arm's length on it. And then when it, as it sort of chews up and spits out people, it then goes, well, actually, no, he was just disgruntled or, you know, he didn't.
Yeah, but would you, you know, if you were running Facebook and somebody persuades you, well, you know, this department, this operation is under-resourced. Mm. And then you'll say, well, it doesn't make me any money. Mm. You know, why should I give them another $1 billion?
Oh, because it can make you a loss. That's why.
Can't.
Oh, I think it can, Tony. I think nothing's forever. And I really do think nothing's forever. And I think the idea that Facebook will be here in 5, 10, 15, 20 years' time is not guaranteed. It's not guaranteed at all.
That's why he owns Instagram and WhatsApp, Mark.
Have Facebook done a cost-benefit analysis to say, well, look, if we spend this much money on content moderation, then user engagement goes up by this much and we make this much more money through advertising. Or it goes down because we're taking all the juicy stuff off.
I'll give you a real life example because the industry is hundreds of years old, is in financial services, that quite often the banks will speculate, they will involve themselves in complex deals where they can shift money from all across the globe, knowing full well that the profits on something could be 1.2 trillion or let's take it even into an Irish scale, maybe it's 1.3 billion. And the fine likely to hit them with is maybe a couple of hundred million. So the fine is never tantamount to the damage that you've done. So you take the risk and you don't change your behaviors. And those, there are people employed to make those actual.
That's like Sunday trading in England when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, there was a hardware shop down the road used to sell oranges for 60 quid on a Sunday, but they'd give you a free hammer drill with every orange. You know, and they got caught, they got fined, but the fine was 50 quid for opening on a Sunday.
Yes, yes.
And they would do it. And Facebook, they've just been fined 5 billion.
Mm, yeah.
But they'd made, I think it was 15 that quarter. So, whatever, you know, we'll just pay 5 billion and carry on doing what we're doing.
And I read recently that the fines across the rest of Europe are increasing You know, Ireland is like, as usual, we lag so far behind. And yet Ireland is the crucible. Ireland is the melting pot. It's where it's all happening. And yet we are so far behind the curve.
I do want to politicize it for a second, because obviously it benefits me with my left-leaning politics. But it was, you know, it's interesting when I think it was in his second speech where the Taoiseach, now Leo Varadkar, spoke about the Digital Safety Commissioner, how it was needed. That was in 2017, pledged that he'd be in place by 2018, and now in the run-up to the general election has said they've issued a paper, and people who we know, Martin, actual professors, have read the paper and said, oh, the funny thing about the new paper is that it doesn't actually set up a digital protection, a digital safety commissioner.
There is not. And plus, the very notion of a digital safety commissioner is, the very concept of it is, it's an impossibility.
Well, I mean, how would that work?
Yeah. Well, when you ask the same question.
How would you enforce it? The Data Protection Commission can't get me the information that I've requested from Facebook under GDPR.
On a standard SAR.
Yeah, which is a standard. And they don't seem to have the resources or the will to go up against this big corporation. So how are you going to deal with something really important?
Well, there is a big element of that, in that the Data Protection Commission here is historically underfunded. Historically underfunded. And I'd ask for more funding. And then when they came out with a report that was critical of the government on the public services card, they didn't get their funding. Simple as. So it's, you know, don't F with us. We left back with you.
Yeah.
Chris, conscious we kept you longer than we planned. Can I ask
waiting for the pizza to arrive.
Yeah, I know.
Promise me pizza.
A couple of beers.
That's why I joined CPLs. They told me there'd be pizza.
Can I ask
where
you?
That got me? Yeah.
Now, you said you're happy to say that you're going on a journey and all the rest of it. You've spoken publicly about what you've been through. You've spoken publicly about how these things affected you. Would you do it again?
No. And really not. No, it was, I mean, it was an interesting time. It was a learning experience, but I'm still struggling to make sense of quite where I'm at and where I'm going to go next and what I'm going to do. So that's 2-3 years of my life now spinning my wheels, and struggling and trying to make sense of my life. And I'm getting people coming forward now because I have a fairly high media profile. I get people contacting me, and people that I know, people that I've never met before, with different stories, and some of them are horrific. There's a guy that I... No, let's not tell that story now, because that would be identifiable. Oh, you can take that out, can't you?
Yeah, I'll take this bit out now anyway.
Right, so... what was I saying? Yeah, so I get these people coming forward, people that I know, people that I've worked with, or complete strangers. And there was one, been there a while, told me a story recently about, you know, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, they've had dinner, watched a movie, cleaning up the house, they put the rubbish out, and they're outside, 2 bags of crap, and you hear a baby crying in one of the flats nearby. And the phrase that this person used was, I lost my shit. I've seen too much child abuse. I just assumed something terrible was happening. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know who to call. I didn't know if I should go and kick the door down or call the police. And I ended up sitting on the street with my head in my hands in tears.
And that's no way to leave a human
being. And that nobody should be in that kind of situation. No. And you say to me, would I do it again? And I'm not quite in that situation, but maybe I would be if I tried to do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe, you know, maybe just somebody said the right thing to me at the right time while I was there that I didn't drop quite that far.
Yeah. Well, Chris, all I can say is thank you so much for coming in and having a chat with us. I hope you will come in to us again in the future.
Yeah, that'd be good. We should keep catch up.
We will do an update on this as it goes along, because you're in a process, as you said yourself. You're in a process, and it will come to a conclusion. That's one thing for certain. It will come to a conclusion.
No, it won't. No, it won't. We're always moving forward, buddy.
Oh, well, I'll be found dead in a ditch.
You won't. No, you won't. No, you won't.
No, my wife is from a country where if you go up against a big corporation, then they find you dead in a ditch, and she's terrified that Mark Zuckerberg is going to send the hit squads to come and get me.
Well, the one thing we'll say about Ireland,
I don't think that's going to happen.
You might be shouting into the void a lot, but there's nobody going to come out of the void at you and kill you for shouting into the void.
If Martin is still here, you're still going to be here.
Chris, thank you so much for coming in.
Pleasure, man. It's been really good.
Thanks for listening, folks. Again, head over to Patreon, hit us up. We need support. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.